Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. What we have been doing for some months now is exploring the myths about money. Our money system is not what we have been led to believe. The creation of money has been privatized or taken over by a private money cartel. Except for coins, all of our money is now created as loans advanced by private banking institutions, including the private Federal Reserve. Banks create the principal, but not the interest, to service their loans. To find the interest, new loans must continually be taken out, expanding the money supply, inflating prices, and robbing you of the value of your money. We've been specifically looking at a book called The Web of Debt, which unravels the deception and presents a clear picture of the financial abyss towards which we are heading. It then explores workable alternatives, particularly one that was tested in colonial America and is grounded in the best of American economic thought, including the writings of Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and Abraham Lincoln. It helps us to analyze and improve our own financial security, personally and nationally, and to deeply understand the cause of the problems we are personally experiencing financially. At the onset, I give an important credit because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in this program are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of attorney, scholar, and author Ellen Brown, who has 11 books and scores of articles on debt-related matters. I highly recommend her book, The Web of Debt. You should also visit her website by the same name. You could also go to www.kruufm.com under Archives to listen to all of the shows produced on this and other debt-related topics. This particular series is under Life and Debt Web. I ended the last show by looking at some examples of how the stock market gets rigged. The last organization involved in this was the CRMPG, called the Counterparty Risk Management Policy Group. They are suspected of colluding to rig markets to a private fraternity of New York banks and investment houses. Counterparties are parties to a contract, normally having a conflict of interest. The CRMPG's dealings were exposed in an article reprinted on the GATA website in September of 2006, which was supported by references to the websites of the Federal Reserve and the CRMPG. The author, who went by the name of Joe Stocks, maintained that the CRMPG was set up to bail out its members from financial difficulties by combining the forces to manipulate markets, and that it was all being done with the approval of the U.S. government. Bailouts, noted Stocks, have been around for a long time. A series of them occurred in the 1990s, beginning with the Mexican bailout finalized on the evening Robert Rubin was sworn in as U.S. Treasury Secretary. This was followed by the 1998 Asian crisis, and then by the 1999 bailout of Long-Term Capital Management, the LTCM, a giant hedge fund dealing in derivatives. The CRMPG was formed in 1999 to handle the LTCM crisis and to develop a policy that would protect the financial world from another such threat in the future. In May 2002, the SEC expressed concern that a certain major bank could become insolvent due to derivative issues. The problem bank was JP Morgan Chase. By the end of the year, the CRMPG had recommended that a new bank be founded that would be a coordinated effort among the members of the CRMPG. The Federal Reserve and the SEC approved, and GPM's problems suddenly disappeared. A stealth bailout had been engineered. The same year saw a big jump in the use of program trades, large-scale computer-assisted trading of stocks and other securities, using systems in which decisions to buy and sell are triggered automatically by fluctuations in price. The major program traders were members of the CRMPG, members that had not had large proprietary trading units, including Citigroup, which was quoted as saying something to the effect that there was now less risk in trading due to new innovations in the field. New innovations in what? Market rigging? Well, in early 2002, program trading was running at about 25% of all shares traded on the New York Stock Exchange. By 2006, it was closer to 60%. About a year later, concerns were expressed in the Wall Street Journal that JPM was making huge profits in the risky business of trading its own capital. Quote, "Profits have been increasing recently due to a small and low-profile group of traders making big bets with the firm's money. Apparently, an 8-man New York team has pulled in more than $100 million of trading profit with the company," end quote. In 2004, Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan renewed concerns about the exploding derivatives market, which had roughly doubled in size since 2000. He called on the major players to meet with the Fed to discuss their derivative exposure and to submit a report on the actions it felt were necessary to keep the markets stable. The report, filed in June 2005, was addressed not to the head of the Fed, but to the chairman of Goldman Sachs. It was written in obscure banker jargon that is not easy to follow, but you don't need to understand the details to get the sense that the nation's largest banks are colluding with their clients and with each other to manipulate markets. The document is all about working together for the greater good, but Stocks notes that this is not how free markets work. The antitrust laws are all about preventing this sort of collusion. The report says we must preserve and strengthen the institutional arrangements whereby, at the point of crisis, industry groups and industry leaders, as well as supervisors, are prepared to work together in order to serve the larger and shared goal of financial stability. It continues, quote, "It is acceptable market practice for a financial intermediary sales and trading personnel to provide their sophisticated counterparties with general market levels or indications, including inputs and variables that may be used by the counterparty to calculate a value for a complex transaction. Additionally, if a counterparty requests a price or level for purposes of unwinding a specific complex transaction, and the financial intermediary is willing to provide such price or level, it is appropriate for the financial intermediary's sales and trading personnel to furnish this information," end quote. Stocks writes, "The big banks are being encouraged to share information. We know there are two sides to each trade. How would you like to be on the other side of one of their prearranged trades?" And I'll return to this in a moment. If you are just tuning in, this is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So again, looking at the situation, Stocks said that big banks are being encouraged to share information. We know that there are two sides to each trade. How would you like to be on the other side of one of their prearranged trades? He warns, quote, their collusion at their highest ranks to secure the financial stability of the largest financial institutions could be at odds with the investments of smaller institutions and may be at odds with the small investors' long-term investments and goals. When LTCM failed, many of us could have not cared less. The bailout was simply to put in place to save their own skins and the investors they serve. We require public corporations to provide open and full disclosure with the public. Why should the CRMPG be allowed to collude to rig the market against free market principles? The CRMPG report gives them the outline to execute their strategy in collusion at the expense ultimately of the small investor. Moral hazard has led to moral decay at the highest ranks of our financial institutions. Move over, PPT, the CRMPG is at the wheel now, end quote. At first blush, the notion that banks and the government are working together to prevent a national economic crisis by manipulating markets sounds benignly paternal and protective. But the wizard's magic that makes money appear where none existed before can also be used to divest small investors of their savings and for partisan political gain. When the economy looks good, incumbents get reelected. Michael Bolser has carefully tracked the Dow against the repo pool, the free money made available to favored investment banks. His charts show that the Fed has routinely engineered the Dow and the dollar to make the economy appear sounder than it is. When Bolser tracked the rise in the stock market at the start of the 2003 Iraq War, for example, he found that the Iraq War rally was nothing of the sort. It was wholly a Fed-engineered exercise. The Orwellian possibilities were suggested by Alex Wallenstein in an April 2004 article. Quote, people would never give up their property rights voluntarily, directly. But if we can be sucked by Fed interest rate policy into no longer saving money because stock market gains are so much higher than returns on CDs and savings bonds, and instead into throwing all of our retirement hopes and dreams at the stock market that can be engineered into a catastrophic collapse in the blink of an eye, then we can all become good little sheep. Then we can be made to march right up to be fleeced and then slaughtered and meatpacked for later consumption by our handlers. End quote. Even if an economic collapse was not being engineered intentionally, many experts were convinced one was coming, and soon. In a 2005 book titled The Demise of the Dollar, Addison Wiggin observed, quote, how can the government promise to pay its debts when the total of that debt keeps getting higher and higher? It's already out of control. In fact, a collapse is inevitable, and it's only a question of how quickly it is going to occur. The consequences will be huge declines in the stock market, savings becoming worthless, and the bond market completely falling apart. It will be a rude awakening for everyone who has become complacent about America's invulnerability, end quote. Hans Schicht had another slant on the approaching day of financial reckoning. He noted in 2003 that David Rockefeller, the master spider, was then 88 years old. Quote, whenever we look, his central command is seen to be fading. Neither is there a capable successor in sight to take over the reins. Hyenas have begun picking up the pieces. Corruption is rife. Rivalry is breaking up the empire. What has been good for Rockefeller has been a curse for the United States. its citizens, government, and country indebted to the hilt, enslaved to his banks. The country's industrial force lost to overseas in consequence of strong dollar policies. A strong dollar pursued purely in the interest of the banking empire and not for the best of the country. The USA now degraded to a service and consumer nation. With Rockefeller leaving the scene, 60 years of dollar imperialism are drawing to a close. As one of the first signs of change, the mighty dollar has come under attack directly on the currency markets and indirectly through the bond markets. The day of financial reckoning is not far off any longer. With Rockefeller's strong hand losing its grip and the old established order fading, the world has entered a most dangerous transition period where anything could happen. End quote. With Rockefeller losing his grip and no replacement in sight, there is evidence that the master spider may have moved its nest back across the Atlantic to London, armed with a navy of pirate hedge funds that rule the world out of the Cayman Islands. In March 2007 article, Richard Freeman observed that the Cayman Islands are a British overseas protectorate. The Caymans function as an epicenter for globalization and financial warfare, with officials who have been hand-selected by what Freeman calls the Anglo-Dutch oligarchy. Quote, for the Anglo-Dutch oligarchy, closely intertwined banks and hedge funds are its foremost instruments of power to control the financial system and loot and devastate companies and nations. The three island specks in the Caribbean Sea, 480 miles south from Florida's southern tip, which came to be known as the Caymans, after the native word for crocodile, had for centuries been a basing area for pirates who attacked trading vessels. In 1993, the decision was made to turn this tourist trap into a major financial power through the adoption of mutual funds law to enable the easy incorporation and or registration of hedge funds in a deregulated system. In 1993, mutual fund law had its effect. With direction from the City of London, the number of hedge funds operating in the Cayman Island exploded from 1,685 hedge funds in 1997 to 8,282 at the end of the third quarter 2006, a fivefold increase. Cayman Island hedge funds are four-fifths of the world total. Globally, hedge funds command up to $30 trillion of deployable funds. According to reports, during 2005, the hedge funds were responsible for up to 50% of the transactions on the London and New York stock exchanges. The hedge funds are leading a frenzied wave of mergers and acquisitions, which reached nearly $4 trillion last year, and they are buying up and stripping down companies from auto parts producer Delphi and Texas Power Utility TXU to office equities properties to hundreds of thousands of apartments in Berlin and Dresden, Germany. This has led to hundreds of thousands of workers being laid off. They are assisted by Wall Street allies. Taken altogether, the hedge funds, with money borrowed from the world's biggest commercial and investment banks, have pushed the world's derivatives bubble well past $600 trillion in nominal value and put the world on the path of the biggest financial disintegration in modern history. Close quote. If you are just tuning in, this is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now, the magnitude of the banking crisis and the desperate attempts to cover it up became apparent in June 2007, when two hedge funds belonging to Bear Stearns Company went bankrupt over derivatives bets involving subprime mortgages gone wrong. The parties were being leaned on to settle quietly to avoid revealing that their derivatives were worth far less than claimed. But as Adrian Douglas observed in a June 30th article called Derivatives in LeMetropoleCafe.com, quote, this is not just an ugly, non-malignant tumor that can be conveniently cut off. This massive financial activity that bets on the outcome of the pricing of the underlying assets has corrupted the system such that those who would be responsible for paying out orders of magnitude more money than they have if the bets go against them are sucked into a black hole of moral and ethical destitution, as they have no other choice but to manipulate the price of the underlying assets to prevent financial ruin. End quote. While derivatives may appear to be complex instruments, Douglas says the concept is actually simple. They are insurance contracts against something happening, such as interest rates going up or the stock market going down. Unlike with ordinary insurance policies, however, these are not catastrophic risks that happen infrequently. They will happen eventually. And if a payout event is triggered, unlike when a house burns down, there will not be just a handful of claims on any one day. Payouts will be due in the trillions of dollars on the same day. It is the financial equivalent of a Hurricane Katrina hitting every U.S. city on the same day. Douglas observed, quote, "Instead of stopping this idiotic sham business from growing to galactic proportions, all the authorities and all the banks and all the major financial institutions around the world have heralded as the best thing since sliced bread. But now all these players are complicit in the crime. They are all on the hook. The stakes are now too high. They must manipulate the underlying assets on a daily basis to prevent triggering the payout of a major derivatives event. Derivatives are a bet against volatility. Guess what has happened? Surprise, surprise. Volatility has vanished. The VIX, the Chicago Board Options Exchange Volatility Index, looks like an ECG when the patient has died. Gold has an unofficial $6 rule. The Dow is not allowed to drop more than 200 points, and it must rally the following day. Interest rates must not rise. If they do, the Fed must issue more of their own now secret M3, ship it offshore to the Caribbean, and pretend that an unknown foreign bank is buying U.S. treasuries like crazy. But the sham is coming unglued because the huge excess liquidity that has been injected into the system to prevent it from imploding is showing up as asset bubbles all over the place and shortages of raw materials are everywhere. There is massive inflation going on. There is no major economy in the world not inflating their money supply by less than 10% annually. End quote. When the derivative buyers realized what was going on and quit paying premiums for insurance that didn't exist, said Douglas, there would be a whole new definition of volatility. And that brings us back to the parasite's challenge. When the bubble collapses, the banking empire built on it must collapse as well, leading to the next point, the meltdown, the secret bankruptcy of the banks. So back to our quotes from The Wizard of Oz. "See what you have done," the witch screamed. "In a minute I shall melt away." With these words, the witch fell down in a brown, melted, shapeless mass and began to spread over the clean boards of the kitchen floor. And that is, of course, from The Wonderful Wizard of Oz in the chapter known as The Search for the Wicked Witch. The debt bubble was showing clear signs of imploding, and when it did, it was likely to liquidate the private banking empire that had been built on it. To prevent the financial meltdown, the witches of Wall Street and their European affiliates had resorted to desperate measures, including a giant derivatives bubble that was jeopardizing the whole shaky system. In February 2004, an article called The Coming Storm, the London Economist warned that top banks around the world were massively exposed to high-risk derivatives and that there was a very real risk of an industry-wide meltdown. The situation was compared to that before the 1998 collapse of long-term capital management, when bets went spectacularly wrong after Russia defaulted. Financial markets went berserk, and LTCM, a very large hedge fund, had to be rescued by its bankers at the behest of the Federal Reserve. John Hoffel wrote in 2002 that the Fed had been quietly rescuing banks ever since. He contended that the banking system actually went bankrupt in the late 1980s with the collapse of the junk bond market and the real estate bubble of that decade. The savings and loan sector collapsed, along with nearly every large Texas bank, and that was just the tip of the iceberg. Quote, Citigroup was secretly taken over by the Federal Reserve in 1989. Shotgun mergers were arranged for other giant banks. Backdoor bailouts were given through the Fed's lending mechanisms, and bank examiners were ordered to ignore bad loans. These measures, coupled with a headlong rush into derivatives and other forms of speculation, gave the banks a veneer of solvency when actually destroying what was left of the U.S. banking system. End quote. The big banks were in trouble because of big gambles that had not paid off, third world loans that had gone into default, giant corporations that had gone bankrupt, massive derivative bets gone wrong. Like with the bankrupt giant Enron, profound economic weakness was masked by phony accounting that created a veneer of solvency. Hoffel wrote, quote, the U.S. banks, especially the derivatives giants, are masters at this game, counting trillions of dollars of worthless IOUs, derivatives, overblown assets, and unpayable debts on their books at face value in order to appear solvent. In the late 1980s, the term zombie was used to refer to banks which manifested some mechanical signs of life but were in fact dead. End quote. Between 1984 and 2002, bank failures were accompanied by a wave of consolidations and takeovers that reduced the number of banks by 45%. The top seven banks were consolidated into three, Citigroup, JPMorgan Chase, and Bank of America. Hoffel wrote, quote, the result of these mergers is a group of much larger and far more bankrupt giant banks. A similar process has played out worldwide. The global list also includes two institutions which specialize in pumping up the U.S. real estate bubble. Both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac specialize in converting mortgages into mortgage-backed securities and will vaporize when the U.S. housing bubble pops. The zombies, said Hoffel, have taken over the asylum. In 2002, Bank One was rumored to be a buyer for the zombie giant JPMorgan Chase. This merger actually occurred in 2004. It was ludicrous, Hoffel wrote, since on paper JPMorgan Chase had twice the assets of Bank One. Still, letting Morgan fail, which it seems determined to do, is clearly unacceptable from the standpoint of the White House Federal Reserve Plunge Protection Team. In a February 2004 article titled, Cooking the Books, U.S. Banks are Giant Casinos, Michael Edward concurred. He wrote that U.S. banks were engaging in smoke and mirror accounting, in which they were merging with each other in order to hide their derivative losses with paper asset bookkeeping. And we'll continue to look at this in the next show. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt-manageable life.